From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Instead of a shovel and pick to dig deeper, Darren Denslow has his iMac G3 and rusty magnifying glass so he can dig deeper for the real story. This is Digging Deeper with DD Denslow on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to TNT Radio. You're here with me, Darren Denslow, Darren of Plymouth, the Twitter account that still hasn't been returned. And we are going to be digging deeper today with my friend, local independent politician and thorn in the council's backside here, Danny Bampin. And I'm preempting him here. I am sure he'll have a little story to tell everybody about his latest darts victory, because he got a bit upset last time because I called him a terrible darts player. But of course, I didn't really mean that, Danny. You've just been listening to the wonderful Rick Munn. And coming up tomorrow here with me on Digging Deeper, I've got a teacher and fellow bigot, Sarah Plumley, and she's got some interesting topics that she wants to talk about. I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to plan my conversation with her. And then on Friday, we've got Rohan Heatley, psychologist, and we're going to do a roundup and a catch-up of the stories that you may have heard or not heard in the last week or so. What do I want to talk about today? Danny, we're going to be looking at some local politics, some national politics, and some big cats. But before we go to Danny, I put a tweet out yesterday about the latest Artemis moon mission by NASA, in which they sent an Orion capsule, a new capsule that they're proposing to use to send people to the moon, around the moon. And there's a picture looking back. And you can see the moon in front of the Earth. And I asked a question on Twitter, was it real or was it fake? And I had about 60 replies. I may have had more now. I haven't gone and checked. And almost every single person believed it is fake, even though multiple space agencies around the world are monitoring this mission. Amateur astronomers all around the planet are watching with their telescopes and other equipment the progress and success of this mission. People still think it is fake. I even had some flat earthers saying that the moon is just a light in the sky. It's part of the dome. There is no moon. And then this is an example of a problem that we have in society in a general way, and that is the complete lack of trust. Nobody believes anything about anything anymore, whether it be space is fake. Space is fake. The Earth is flat. Or, Elon Musk or Russell Brand or this person or this person or this person. They're all part of the plan. They're all part of the cabal. Usually evidence-free statements. Just because of a tattoo or, a Halloween costume. Now, I'm not saying that they're not. But what I'm saying is this complete lack of trust in everything, which in some ways has been well-deserved. Our establishment, the people in power, our politicians, the elites, the parasitic class, they haven't earned our trust. But this lack of trust has filtered down into just everyday people, friends, boyfriends and girlfriends, neighbors, everybody no longer has that. What used to be quite an intrinsic property that everybody had, and that was trust, has been gone. And I think if we are going to succeed in preventing the agenda that they're trying to push upon us, we need to look at each other, our neighbors, our friends, our family, and start trusting each other and not automatically assuming that every single thing is fake, that every single person is part of the cabal and an enemy, and that nothing or no one can be trusted. And this Artemis moon mission is an example of that. I personally believe space is real, and I do believe that this particular mission is real. The question we have to ask, why all the fuss about going around the moon and going to the moon when we did it 40 years ago? Now that might have been fake. Okay, so if you're on the live chat, great. I'll go and check. I'll go and see what you're saying. Probably get some criticism for saying space is real, or that I've said some sort of supportive word of Elon Musk. But while you're on there, on the live chat, go and check out our merchandise. If you're not on the website, it's tntradio.live. Go and check it out. Chuck us a comment. Go and buy yourself a hoodie. And if you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now, there's no reason ever to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
Headlines as they happen.
Every day, something new.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, I'm here with a fellow Plymouthian and thorn in the local council's backside, Danny Bampin. Danny, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
I'm good, Darren. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Go on and tell everybody, go on quickly before we get into the serious stuff.
Well, I beat you at darts. Yeah, I did beat you at darts. It was a close game, but it was a long time since I beat you. So it was quite a monumentous event, really, to be fair.
He didn't beat me. He won a set. He won a set. And he has
that's
won
beating
the
you
occasion.
In my eyes, that's beating you.
That's it. Any leg is a big win for Danny. That's but true. He has won more legs recently, so that's good. And maybe we'll catch up for a game later. Okay, so I've got a story here. You have sent me some stories. Some are local. Some are one is national. And obviously, at the end, I want to talk to you about your interest in big cats or the latest developments in the big cat story. But first, let's talk about a certain Richard Bingley, head of Plymouth City Council. There's been an investigation into Plymouth Council's chief for an expletive-filled rant which cost taxpayers more than £9,000, which is six times as much as a Band A council tax bill. I know you love your council tax, Danny. An inquiry into allegations that the leader of Plymouth City Council breached the council's code of conduct cost the taxpayer more than £9,000, a Freedom of Information request has revealed. Bingley suffered the indignity earlier this month of being the first council leader in more than a decade to have a complaint about his conduct upheld by Emma Jackson, the council's monitoring office and head of legal services. A number of complaints have been made in April this year in relation to a leaked recording made during a phone call between him and a member of the public, later identified as entrepreneur and former independent council candidate Danny Bampin. So, Danny, can you just tell us on the update of that story? Try to leave most of the names out. I'm only really interested in hearing about Richard Bingley for a variety of reasons. So, over to you, mate.
Well, I have to be very careful what I say, because there's an ongoing criminal investigation into all of this, and it's quite fascinating, really. I think when you look at Councillor Bingley's history. Yeah, he's come from Essex, London, and he's come down to Plymouth a couple of years ago. The Tories, the local Conservatives, selected him to stand in Southway at the last minute when actually they had a better candidate already lined up. But anyway, he then got elected. But before that, he was a Conservative member 20 years ago. Then he joined Labour and he used to work in Tony Blair's kind of press office. And then he went to move to UKIP, and then he stood in UKIP for a number of times in Essex. I think he got elected as a UKIP councillor in Essex. And then he's gone back to the Conservatives after Brexit, come to Plymouth. And now, you know, he was director of Save Our Statues Limited when all the Black Lives Matter stuff. He was a massive supporter of me doing the Sir John Hawkins Square stuff, which the signs are still not back up, by the way, and the order that they've got is void, and all of this. And then all of a sudden, he then does a deal with Labour, and the Labour put in a vote of no confidence against probably the best council leader that Plymouth's had since I've been here in the last 25 years, Nick Kelly. You know, Plymouth born and bred, wants to do the best for the city. He's not egotistical, and Richard Bingley is everything else. He's the complete opposite. He's not from Plymouth. He's massively egotistical, and he's basically trying to position himself, I believe, so that he can get selected by the Conservatives to stand in the next election. Maybe he might fight going against Luke Pollard in Plymouth. He might take the safe seat that's being stood down by Gary Streeter. So there's all these options on the table. But he's now council leader, and he phoned me earlier this year in his capacity as a councillor to give me an update on him talking to the deputy chief executive of Plymouth City Council about putting the signs back up. And when he phoned me, he started to rant about the other councillors and all this stuff. And as you know, my YouTube channel is The Public Detective. And when a local councillor phones me about a live court case that I'm involved in about the council, I'm going to record it. And so I did. And in that recording, he says a huge amount of stuff, really bad, about his fellow Conservative councillors and other council officers and other councillors as well, even the independent one who's my councillor, Chas Singh. And he said all this really nasty stuff, told me about his plan to do a coup and take over the leadership of the council, which he then did. And when he enacted it and it happened, and you had like 8 or 9 Labour councillors voting for him, and the Conservative group broke the rules because they put 2 candidates forward, Vivian Pangeli and Richard Bingley, and the Labour group didn't even put forward a candidate, yet they had nearly as many seats. So they could have won. And it makes you wonder, he's done that behind closed doors before they did it. They went in there, they enacted it. And I've known people like Maddie Bridgman and Chas Singh a long time. And I've got to know Nick Kelly over the last couple of years really well. And these are good people. These are hardworking councillors. And Richard Bingley ripped into them. And also Terry Beer as well. So basically what I did, Darren, is I got that recording and I sent it. Because in the recording, Bingley says, I don't mind if any of this gets back to them. He actually says those words. So I sent it to Chas Singh, Nick Kelly, Manny Bridgman. And within 2 or 3 days, there was a news story. Somebody had cut it up and put it on Twitter under Plymouth Politics something. And it just became a massive thing. And now the council have got a transcript of the recording, and then they got this independent guy in, Melvin Kenyon. And as you alluded to, there's a news story today that Carl Eve's done a story about the FOI answers that he's got back, and it cost the council $9,000. And then in the story is compared, oh, that's like a council tax bill. Yeah, and you know why he's done that, don't you? Because I've not been in a position to pay council tax for over a decade, since the council unlawfully made me bankrupt for not paying. So, you know, it's obviously a little dig at me. My name's always in there, but it is what it is, Darren. And as you know, that, you know, things have really got out of hand because Richard Bingley has pulled some strings and had certain people arrested. And that's even more interesting when you look at his profile on the council's website, and he hasn't declared his conflict of interest that his wife, Melania, I think she's called, works for Devon and Cornwall Police. So there's very lots of dodgy stuff going on. I've got to say, right now, we've got the worst council we've had in Plymouth in the last 25 years, without a doubt. You've got a load of idiots in there and a load of inexperienced people who think they know what they're doing, when absolutely one of them, allegedly, has got epilepsy and continues to drive, and the other week had a crash. So there's a bit of an exclusive for you. I won't name which one.
Yeah, we don't want any names.
It's all going to come out in the wash. These things don't hide.
Yeah, and going back to Bingley, and we've talked about, you know, I've talked about the Sir John Hawkins Square issue quite a few times now on the radio. It's something that's very, very, very close to my heart. Being a Navy background myself, worked in the dockyard for 15 years. My father, grandfather, uncles, they were all Navy. So, you know, Sir John Hawkins Square built this city. And Bingley, being an ex, Save the Statue, the person who ran at the Save the Statue, which was big for a good couple of years, particularly through 2020 with the BLM stuff, for him to then get put into power, get made Conservative leader, and I thought, oh, this is going to be good news, because his first job is put up the name of one of Plymouth's most famous sons back up, which they wanted to take down for a black footballer who's now got his own statue in name somewhere else and in the road somewhere else, which again was thanks to you, Danny. But Sir John Hawkins hasn't had his name returned. Richard Bingley has gone, no, we'll call it Zelensky Square. So this guy is corrupt as they come. He should not be leader of the council in the first place. Anyone who goes from Labour to UKIP to Save the Statues to Conservatives to whatever his next move will be, i.e. he wants to be an MP, I believe that he has been put in position here in Plymouth City Council, probably in prep for the MP role. What was his punishment then for bringing the council into disrepute, for attacking fellow councillors, for attacking the fellow, for the former Conservative leader of the council, as well as, you know, rubbishing the public and offering and wanting to make, you know, change Sir John Hawkins into the Zelensky Square and naming it after an actual Nazi supporter? What was his punishment for all of this?
He got a letter from the monitoring officer, Emma Jackman, to say, Richard, you've been a naughty boy. And that letter, that notice of breach of the council code of conduct, which he did six times in 20 minutes, by the way, which must be some kind of record, that is now on his profile on Plymouth City Council. So, you know, it's there for everybody to read. And the other thing is that's quite public, and you mentioned Save Our Statues, is that he set up with another guy called Peter Whittle, Save Our Statues Limited. So there's a limited company. But when you go onto the Wayback Machine, which is a website where you can go and look at websites that have been removed because they've basically been screenshot or whatever, grabbed, you can go onto that saveourstatues.org.uk and you can see that it was advertised as a non-profit charitable entity where people could donate via PayPal and also you could join. Now, what was interesting, when I first met Mr. Bingley, he was very proud of this and the fact that he'd been selected to stand in the election.
I mean, I was there with you, wasn't I, when you first met him? We did it down Wilfrey's Cafe.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't like the guy then. And he was slimy as hell.
Yeah, but he was going on about how they'd raised, like, I think his words were something like, we've raised six figures in 6 months, or something along those lines. It was quite significant. It wasn't, because it became a big thing. It was in the press. He was always getting quoted. And basically, if you look at Companies House, that entity, Save Our Statues, didn't file any accounts and then was struck off earlier this year. And from my perspective, if I was going to do that, that's basic fraud. Telling people that you're doing this for Save Our Statues, you can join this limited company, you could donate to this limited company, and the guy doesn't, and the two directors never resigned. Peter Whittle from the New Culture Forum never resigned, neither did Bingley, and yet the entity never filed any accounts and got wound up earlier this year. It's just a scam.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, not that I want to say, hey, investigate Save Our Statues, or Save the Statues, whatever the correct name is.
No, SOS, however, Save Our Statues.
Save Our Statues, but maybe they should look into it, because that should be a legitimate concern, a legitimate cause, and not something that should be taken advantage of by somebody who wants to profit and move his political career. Okay, when we come back after this, we're going to an ad break right now. We're going to have a look at the unacceptable waiting times for 99 calls, and there's actually a statement here that really hits home to the heart, especially me and you have daughters, lots of people have daughters out there, so please stay with us. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Joe Hoft.
Mike Pence, the vice president, who up till that time was somewhat questionable as far as, you know, where did he stand? He'd been relatively quiet during the Trump presidency, just stood there. Well, he comes out and announces while President Trump is speaking on a very cold day in Washington, D.C. My brother was there. There was numerous people I know that ended up there and said it was the biggest crowd they'd ever seen. At least 1 million people showed up that day to protest the stolen election. And during President Trump's speech, where he's just going through this battery of corruption, battery of questionable ballots, President Trump's laying it out, and then Mike Pence drops a bomb that he's gonna certify the results. He says there's no, he has no option, he has to do it. And I believe that was a lie. And he had every option. And I believe that that a good man would have done that. A good man wouldn't have said, well, you know, I have to do this. There's a timing issue here. No, I think a good man would have said, you know what? these results are not certifiable. I'm not going to certify them. But Mike Pence failed and failed miserably.
Joe Hoft on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com. The Congo provides 60% of the world's cobalt. Children as young as 7 breathe in cobalt-laden dust so you can drive an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. This is me, Darren Denslow. I'm here talking to local independent politician and thorn in the council backside, Danny Bampin. And you sent me a story, Danny. I'll just read out the first few lines. Unacceptable 999 and 101 call waiting times across Devon and Cornwall soar. Callers wait 25 seconds to have calls answered when police chief has urged a target of under 10 seconds. And some of these delays, I think the average is actually 25 seconds, but there are a lot of emergency calls that take a lot longer. Rather going into the story, because it's a short segment, here's a statement that was in this article, and it said, somebody tried to get my daughter into their car. She escaped, ran off, he explained. We rang 999. We were told, well, she's not in danger now, so this is not a 999 call. Well, no, but it's somebody else's daughter is in danger. What do you think about this story? It can be applied to police forces across the UK. It's not just a Devon and Cornwall issue. Is this an example of our police force being overburdened and focusing on issues, not crimes?
Well, it's madness, isn't it? I mean, when you think about it, they're taking so long to answer the phone, and they're also prioritizing the wrong things, and it's just completely upside down, really. I think that Alison Hernandez is really trying to get the new chief constable of Devon and Cornwall Police to kind of focus on this issue, but ultimately, it's down to the numbers of staff they've got and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But there's some really bad decisions being made in the prioritizing of stuff. And like you said, that story about somebody phoning up, somebody's trying to just abduct my daughter. Oh, well, they didn't get her, so it's not an emergency. Oh, well, they're just going to nick somebody else's daughter, then it become an emergency. So the whole thing just in crazy nuts, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense. And we hear about this, you know, we hear about a lot. We always hear about London. We hear about all the knife crimes. We hear about, you know, the grooming gangs. We hear about all these very, very serious crimes that are happening in an increasing occurrence. And then we have someone like Sadiq Khan come out and say, yeah, well, it's because there's more people. Population is increasing. That's why we have an increasing crime. In this city, why do you think there has been an uptick in crime in Plymouth, just as there has been in other large cities across the country? Is there any reasons why you think that might be? And I'm prodding you here.
Well, I think with the economic situation, I think people are getting desperate. That's one thing. But there seems to obviously, like most cities around the UK, at the moment be a massive influx of immigrants. You know, I'm not sure where they're from, but you know, you know, and I'm not being racist in any way, they're in every city in the UK and they've been putting up in hotels by the government and all this stuff, and they're continuing to come in every day. And you start to think, you know, and some of these people who have been up before the courts, like there was a guy like this week or last week been charged with rape. And, you know, he's an immigrant. He's just literally come to Plymouth and raped someone, allegedly, you know, and now he's in jail. It just, the whole, the situation is just getting worse by the day. And you start to wonder where the breaking point is and where something really bad's going to happen, you know, and people are going to start to take the law into their own hands. That's what's going to start to happen, especially if the police can't get on top of it. That's what's going to happen.
Well, they're not answering the phone quickly enough. And even when they do catch someone, they go, oh, look, you know, oh, we've caught that person who raped somebody on Mutley Plain the other day. That's great. It described as a Plymouth man. They're always described as a Plymouth man or 28-year-old man, and they will never show a picture. Unless it's an actual white man, then that picture, full name, all the details, Danny Bampin, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I'm not saying
that.
But you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
For the people who are listening, describe the demographic change in the inner city of Plymouth over the last 5 years. We could probably say the last 3 years, because I've often reported on it, and it's nice to have somebody sort of, I'm not saying that you are about to verify things that I've said. I'm asking, in your own words, what the change has been in Plymouth in terms of the colour.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's gone massively diverse. You've got a massive diversity of people in Plymouth now, where when I moved here 25 years ago, it wasn't really like that at all. But the last few years, for certain, is, you know, and that can be a good thing. No doubt that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. And when you've got a mix of students that are only here for, I don't know, 3/4 of the year, 2/3, And then you've got this influence and influx of migrants and stuff. And then you've got, obviously, the core Plymouth people who live here, like me and you. I've been here 25 years. I'm originally from Bolton, so I'm not Plymouthian. But I feel like I am, because I've been here for 25 years. But, yeah, so the last few years, it's really changed. And, you know, just by walking around Plymouth, you can see, you know, how much it's changed. I'd also say there's a lot of more younger people in Plymouth now than there were when I first moved here.
Yeah, and, you know, the university has made a massive difference. And, you know, for a while, it really, really, really did benefit the city as the dockyard declined. You know, the dockyard used to be the dominant workforce and used to have a massive Navy presence in the city. You know, that's why there was such a great nightlife here once upon a time. But now, you know, the university is still there. But in the last 2 to 3 years, we have received, you know, thousands and thousands of people from the Africa, from Middle East, and it's massively changed the city, and crime rates have increased, in particular attacks on young girls and crimes involving knives. Right, so we're going to come right back after the break, Danny. We're going to look at what's going on with the Conservative Party, independent politics, Brexit Party or Reform, Reclaim, and all these other guys, Heritage. So please stay with us. We'll be right back after these quick news headlines on TNT Radio.
Big news.
A story which contains more than first meets the ear.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a check of your TNT headlines. Twitter's new CEO, Elon Musk, has picked a public fight with Apple for charging software developers a 30% fee for in-app purchases. NATO has announced it's strengthening its presence across Eastern Europe from the Black Sea to the Baltics as it steps up its support for Ukraine. And Britain's new Prime Minister has declared China a rival, saying the days of close economic cooperation with Beijing are over.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back. We're here on Digging Deeper. I'm talking to Danny Bampin. I've just had a quick look at the live chat, and I see that there is some discussion about a flat earther coming on the show to talk to me. I would actually quite like that. I'm not sure how necessary the station feels about it, but I will check out that guy that you've mentioned. And as long as I can have a friendly, reasonable conversation without people screaming at me because, you know, I'm not awake because I don't believe the earth is flat, then great. I'd love to have that chat. Okay, Danny, go on, you're gonna say something?
Yeah, I was gonna say you should do the flat earther chat because the flat earthers are dotted all around the globe.
And they seem to have definitely come out of the woodworks during the last couple of years. I've never met so many people who believe the earth is flat as I have done.
It literally is a global conspiracy.
Okay. Anyway, back to the UK. And here's a story. This was by Guido Fawkes. Tory MPs in talks with Richard Tice and Nigel Farage's party to defect have been ongoing for many weeks, Guido understands. Contrary to suggestions in an Eye exclusive on Monday, discussions occurred well before Liz Truss becoming PM, who was PM when we last talked on the show, Danny, and weren't necessarily sparked by Rishi Sunak's accession or selection for number 10. 2 days ago, the Eye reported the Red Wall MPs are being courted by the Reform Party as it seeks a wave of UKIP-style defections among dissatisfied Tories. I think there's a lot of infighting going on in the Conservative Party. Rishi Sunak has got problems from members of his parties from all angles, whether it's cost of lockdown, whether it's immigration, whether it's ongoing issues with COVID, whether it's the energy crisis, or, and I probably just said it a minute ago, but I'm going to say it again because it's such a hot potato, immigration. What do you think about the current state of the Conservative Party and Rishi Sunak's selection as leader?
Well, it's all a bit bizarre, isn't it? Because, you know, they did that whole process and elected Truss and let the members of the party vote her in. And then she did a really great job for a few weeks. So great that then she got ousted and had to resign. The economy collapsed, markets collapsed, and yet she was trying to do the right thing in a way. And then along comes, what is it called, Hunt. Yeah, she appoints him as the chancellor. And then you have this new leadership thing, and then you know who's going to win. So it's almost like they're doing it right in front of our eyes. And maybe they thought that Rishi was going to win first time. And that's why they maybe misadvised Truss to do some stuff to say, you should do this. And then deliberately crash the markets and stuff because they're in control of this shit. Don't think that they're not. The people in the background pulling the strings, the puppet masters. So, you know, and obviously they wanted Rishi in there for whatever reason, just like they wanted Boris in there to do Brexit. It's all by design. And people think, oh, yes. And this is the biggest problem is people keep voting for political parties, yeah, especially red and blue. It's a bit like red and blue in America. There's only two choices. Certainly since I've been alive, the only hiccup was when they had that David Cameron coalition thing with the Lib Dems. And this is what you've got going on in Plymouth now locally, is that you're going to find that the Plymouth Independent Alliance, the new group set up with Charles and Nick and Terry Beer, that they're going to become kingmakers in Plymouth because whatever happens in the next election, I think people in the local election, certainly next year, are going to vote independent because a lot of conservatives won't vote conservative because of what's happened. And most of them will probably stay at home because 70% of people stay at home and don't vote on the local elections anyway. And then they moan about the councillors that have been voted in. So they're sort of total hypocrites, the no voters. Yeah, they'll sit there and be keyboard warriors and moan about everything, but they don't democratically exercise their right to vote, and they need to. If 20% of the non-voters came out in the local and national elections and applied their vote to an independent candidate, those people would get in. And this is what people don't realize, is that Parliament was originally set up purely for independent candidates to represent the people independently. It was only when the City of London and the banks took over the control of the money that they then set up and funded the Tory party. That Tory party is the first ever party to exist in Britain. And then it obviously becomes the Conservatives, and then you get the Labour, and that's it. Then you've just got two choices. And now, you know, now it's like almost like going to Sky TV from when we had four channels to 50 channels. Now you've not got one or two parties, you've got 50 parties. You know, you've got Breakthrough Party, which I became aware of the other day, which seems really weird. You've never heard of them, exactly. I never heard of them, but Chaz walked in with this leaflet and I looked at their website. Oh, what the hell are these guys? And so, yeah, there's a lot. But and then you've got this reform stuff, which is people don't realize, or they probably do, but that's the Brexit Party rebranded. And Brexit Party, originally, when it was set up by Farage, it only ever had three members, because that's the minimum number you need to set up a political party. And everybody else, like hundreds of thousands of people, were registered financial supporters or whatever they were. They'd all donated, but they were not members. And what the Reform Party did last October is they changed that. So you can now join the Reform Party for £25, which I don't advise anybody to do, but that's up to them. It's their political beliefs. But ultimately, I think that's why I set up in 2015 the No Party, because I tried to set up none of the above as a political party, because if you add none of the above on the ballot paper, it would win hands down every time. But Tony Blair recognised this, brought in new legislation that banned anybody setting up none of the above as a political party. I tried to get around the legislation and call it the No Thank You Party, NOTAR, which abbreviates to NOTAR, and they wouldn't allow it. So I want to give a big shout out to the Plymouth Independent Group in Plymouth, run by Nick Kelly and Charles and Terry Beer, because they're going to grow. They're going to grow, and they're going to field candidates in the forthcoming by-elections, because they put forward a motion in the last council meeting the other week, and it passed. So, but that's the thing, my beauty about being a group. They can put forward motions. Labour supported it, and it was to sack, basically, and get them to resign two Conservative councillors that got elected and then moved to Gloucester, 150 miles away, still taking their grand a month allowance. And lo and behold, 5 days later, they actually resigned. So now there's a by-election, probably at the cost of £50,000 to the council. There's two chaps, Andrew Hill and Gavin Marshall. And Gavin is standing in Moorview, and Andrew Hill is standing in Plimpton, Chadderwood, and they're going to be independent candidates endorsed by the Plymouth Independent Group, which is great. And I think next May, Plymouth Independent Group will have it will either be a political party, a micro political party itself, or it will be independent still as a movement in Plymouth, and it will field endorsed independent candidates in the next May elections. And I think that's a really strong message to people, is that if they are going to vote, don't vote red. Don't vote blue. Don't vote yellow. Don't vote green. Don't vote.
Definitely don't vote green.
The colours to the independent, in my eyes, are black and white. That's why my flyers have always been black and white, because you need to be black and white with people. And people like Richard Bingley are 50,000 shades of grey.
Absolutely. And yeah, I hate to think what he might get up to in the bedroom with his foreign wife. Now you mentioned 50 shades of grey. Anyway, Darren's mind just wandered off somewhere else then. That's your fault, Danny. But you are right. I mean, I have actually got Nick Kelly coming on again in a couple of weeks, where we'll be talking about the Plymouth Independent Alliance, independent politics, how there, you know, we saw similar things. We actually tried to do something similar ourselves, Danny, 2 years ago, where we had a small group of independent candidates, although some of them didn't take it seriously enough when they should have. It was such an important election that year in 2021. And we saw other groups. In fact, I think it was it Gloucestershire again? Was it Gloucestershire? They had
a large independent group that gave it a good go in that particular election. And there were lots of independent groups up and down the country. And it seems like Plymouth have actually really tried to formalise that and get some few of the local political heavyweights to give it a bit more clout, to get a bit more, be a bit more optic and visible to the public, so that when we come to the local elections in 2023, there's a greater chance of independent candidates being elected directly into the council. And, you know, I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks now, that I may put my name in the hat again, although I am reluctant for one reason. This is why I'm going to push back on you, Danny, is that one, it can't be a party, because that sort of defeats
you can't really alliance. Be an independent. You can't be independent and be a member of a political party. It's a bit, it's total contradiction. Yeah, I get that.
And I have a firm believer, and I have pushed this message myself, particularly when I had a bit more clout on social media. Still waiting for my count to come back. That voting isn't necessarily the answer. And how can we really, really trust our political system and our election system now? I'm even of the feeling that maybe Boris was cheated into position in the first place. We've seen the 2020 election clearly rigged, clearly cheated, even if it wasn't, you know, about ballots and that. The whole process and the environment that they created with COVID prior to the election allowed them to cheat and help sway the vote in one way, even if they didn't actually rig the ballots, which I think they did. And we've seen it again in 2022 in the midterms. We've seen it in Canada, Australia. I can't comment too much on the Australian election that they've had recently. We've seen some European elections that are a bit suspect. So do you still believe, quickly before we go to our next break, Danny, that voting is the answer, or is it just the only option that we have at the moment, other than violence on the streets?
If everybody voted, like in Australia, that where you get fined $500 if you don't exercise your right to vote. And also you should have voter ID, you know, otherwise you could have any cauliflower walking in there, you know, and you don't know who these people are. So it's the same with America. They rigged the election again in the midterms recently to make it look like Sleepy Joe won, when in reality that was not the case. We all know that. It's just the charade. But the fact is that if absolutely everybody was forced to vote and they applied their vote independently, because a lot of people who don't vote would vote independent because they don't want to vote for a party. So that actually makes sense. If everybody in this country was fined £200 for not voting, you'd get a massive turnout in all the elections. And then we'd get independent candidates being elected in, and that would change the system from within. But they don't want that. They want you to be brainwashed into thinking there's only two options. So, yeah. And the other thing is, Plymouth has never had an independent candidate be elected. And that's what needs to happen. And I think it's getting closer and closer, because they're just shooting themselves in the foot with an Uzi.
Yeah, well, I'll have a similar conversation with Nick in a couple of weeks. And, you know, who knows, maybe live on air, I'll announce that Darren of Plymouth is a candidate again, and see if I can scare the living crap out of Labour like I did last time, because that was the best part of it. I didn't get the votes, but Labour panicked. Panic. Amazing what a Twitter account can do. Okay, when we come back, well, we're going to change the subject and we're going to talk about big cats. There has been a cat flap. Not my words. I didn't come up with that term. That's a Danny term. So please stay with us for the cat flap on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
What better way to celebrate Thanksgiving than by publishing an article called We're Thankful for Our Abortions, written by Nakia Natale, an attorney and an abortion storyteller. The piece appeared at TheNation.com. She trashes the holiday by calling it an unforgivable genocide of Native Americans, trashes America too, but lucky for her, she's able to look to her past and be most grateful for the abortions that she has had, both of them. I kid you not. She quotes eight women from a group called We Testify as they express how they, too, are so very thankful for killing their babies. Yes, it's one big celebration. Most of them have had more than one abortion and express no regrets. One of these beauties is quoted as saying, "We have to get to a point where we don't care what people think. The silence hasn't gotten us anywhere, and it's rooted in abortion stigma. If you prioritized yourself and you know that you did the best thing for you, it shouldn't matter what anyone else thinks." I wonder how many of these women have ever even considered the babies that they kill so that they might pursue school or a career. Let's call them the witches of We Testify. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
A bushfire tip from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
It's a fact that cars are a significant cause of bushfire. Parking in long dry grass means hot exhaust and hot brakes may start a fire. When travelling in bushland areas, remember to park in designated car parks or away from dry vegetation. And whatever you do, don't throw cigarette butts out the car window. Prevention of bushfires is your responsibility. Get FireWise. For more information, contact your local fire station.
This is today's news talk.
Talking is a good thing.
And the voice of freedom.
Let's listen now.
Now, right now.
TNT.
Welcome back. You're with me, Darren Denslow, on Digging Deeper. And I'm here with Big Cat Enthusiast, Danny Bampin. Just a quick shout out to some of the messages in the live chat. Correction, if you don't vote in Australia, it's a $30 fine, I believe.
So how much?
$30 Australian dollars. I've just been informed by an Australian, I'm assuming. And wow. Oh, there's lots of discussion about getting Eric Dugney to talk about Flat Earth. So I've actually asked for contact details. Send them to me, please. And I will contact him for a friendly interview on the topic. Now, Big Cats, Danny, you are what's the name of the website that you run?
It's called the British Big Cat Society, and the website is britishbigcats.org.
Okay, I've been doing it for
25 years and stuff. It's been quite mad, actually, because I am actually a cryptozoologist. Not a lot of people know that, but I am, okay. Which is somebody who looks for unverified animals, which is why I've got a tattoo of a coelacanth on my arm. Which okay. is a prehistoric fish, which they found, which uh-huh. exists, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I originally came to Plymouth to become, which I did for 5 years, an underwater cameraman. So that's what I did. Uh-huh. I traveled the world. I got my HSC diving ticket and did all that stuff. But in the background was always this, this fascination with the Beast of Bodmin Moor, the Beast of Dartmoor, Beast of Exmoor, the Fen Tiger. And all these things, the Cannock Chase Puma, the Surrey Puma, there's lots of, and lots of people locally give them these names, but they're not beasts, they're just large cats. And people don't realize that when the American airmen came over for the Second World War, they brought mascots with them, which were puma cubs or bobcats, lynxes. And lynx used to be indigenous to Britain, but we've never had, well, maybe in prehistoric times, we might have had a big cat like a saber-toothed tiger or something. But a big cat, scientifically, is only a big cat if it's got the capacity to roar. So you're looking at tigers, lions, jaguars, leopards. But all the other cats, like puma, that's a felis genus because it can't roar. Yes, size-wise, it's a big cat. So is a cheetah. That's a big cat, but it can't roar. But so do we have big cats in Britain? If we did, we'd have a leopard, a melanistic leopard, which is commonly known as a panther, like a Janet Jackson cat. And people, when the airmen left in the Second World War, they didn't take the cubs with them, and they weren't cubs anymore. They were semi-feral and living on airfields. So basically, there's one example of maybe people reintroducing them accidentally. Then you had all the mm-hmm. traveling menageries, and then you had zoos up and down the country, and it wasn't illegal to tell the police or the local authority that you lost an animal until about a decade ago, which is crazy when you really think about it, And then the legislation changed in 1976. They brought the Dangerous Wild Animals Act in, which meant anybody who had an exotic pet had to give it to zoo or wildlife park, or have it put down, or buy an expensive license from the local authority and then build a big enclosure for whatever thing you had. But what they didn't make in that legislation was make it too illegal for people to just introduce these big cats or spiders or wallabies or parakeets, whatever it was, into the wild in Britain. People were emotionally attached to these pets because that's what they were, and they weren't going to have them put down, and they couldn't afford XYZ, so they let them go. And that loophole didn't close until the Countryside Act in 1981. So people had a 5-year legal window to just throw any exotic animal out into the wild in Britain. And that's how it kind of exploded from then. In the 80s, you got all these sheep attacks on Dartmoor and Exmoor and Bodmin Moor. And if you look at a map, those three moors are like a triangle, like, you know, they're like each point of a triangle on the map. And the hot spot right in the middle, Holsworthy area, West Anstey, all around that area, real massive hotspot for years. So yeah, they're up and down the country, and people sight them every day. And people come forward and say, I've taken a picture of this. And it's like, that's not a big cat, that's just a large pussycat. Yeah. So it's good that we're there, because people have got somebody they can go to. 9 times out of 10 people do phone the police, and the police do log the calls most of the time, but they don't do anything about it. They're not there to go and chase big cats. And they'll take 20 minutes to answer the bloody phone anyway.
Yeah. And then they'll tell you, nah, what, you saw a big cat chewing on somebody? Yeah, I scared it off. Oh, it's not an emergency, mate. Hey, there are other people out there that might get attacked by a big cat. And actually, the last couple of years, I have looked into some reports. I sent you a video that was recorded by Sargon, by Carl Benjamin on his Lotus Eaters podcast platform. Did you watch it? Did you? There were some videos on there that were compelling. If they were taken in the UK, that was a big cat eating something.
No, it wasn't. I've looked at that video. I thought it was at first, but the more you look at it, it's a calf. It's a small cow.
It's a small cow. It looked like
I'm telling you, Darren. People don't know what they're looking at. Yeah, it really is a small cow. It really is.
I've got one behind me. But according to that video, and if you go and look at big cats and click on news, you will actually see there's been quite a lot of reports lately. I mean, I've got one here from Gloucester. A woman said, from Amy, said she was blown away at what she was seeing. There wasn't any traffic around. A big cat walked right in front of her. She said she was only she was driving. It run right across her. She was only doing 30 miles an hour, she said. But then she goes, oh, it was the size of a German Shepherd and much longer, about 55 inches. And the minute a woman starts mentioning dimensions, I go, ooh, yeah, not sure about that. That's the sexist in me. But the point I'm getting to is there has been a cat flap, and a flap used to be associated with things like UFOs. You know, you'd have a UFO flap where there'd be a lot of sightings in a short period of time. It's been the same with big cats in the UK over the last 2.5 years during the lockdown period and mm-hmm. up to now. What do you think the reason, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left, what do you think the reasons are for this cat flap?
Yeah, well, that's my title of my book that I'm currently writing for my 25-year search for big cats in Britain. And that is my working title, The Big Cat Flap. But yeah,
it's a good name.
Ultimately, I think that because people haven't been out as much, that the cats have started to wander to places where they've never been before, perhaps. And that's why they're being seen more often. And obviously now that we've come out of the unlawful lockdown, obviously those cats might be still in those places. But I think there's some really interesting reports that have been recently. I did a radio interview last week because there was a sighting at the end of Birmingham Airport. Literally, there was, and since then I did that radio interview, I've had about 3 or 4 other sightings come through the BritishBigCats.org website of people telling me in the last few weeks, months, that they've also seen this large black cat there. And one of them was a on-duty police officer who was sat in his patrol car with his partner, and they observed it for 10 minutes. But they didn't do anything about it. They didn't film it on their dash cam either, because I asked him, did you not film it on phone or anything? No, we just sat there and watched it. What? So, yeah, it's really frustrating when you, and then you've got like,
and police
like
officers.
Farmers. Yeah, they're police officers. Yeah, exactly.
Tells you all you need to know.
I know.
Tells you all you need to
but
know.
Listen, the thing,
bloody useless.
It was nice of him to report it, but he could have actually, you know, got some solid evidence of it. So, but it, yeah, I spoke to a farmer the other week who's had a couple of sheep killings in Wales and stuff, and he sent me a couple of pictures on WhatsApp. And you've got the sizes going right in the neck, and it's meticulous the way that some of the sheep have been pulled apart there. You know, when it's dogs and foxes, they're very messy. Yeah, they don't care. Cats are surgical. That's why they've got really sharp claws, and that's how they kill to the neck and suffocate, whether it's a deer or sheep. I've been to West Wales and found sheep carcasses up trees, yeah? And I found really big scratches in the trees and all that stuff. We found cat scat, we found hares, and there's been 19 bodies of big cats found in Britain. But the best one was Felicity, who was caught near Loch Ness. And she's now in Inverness Museum, stuffed in the foyer. So, yeah, and then a farmer killed one on Burnham Manning's land. He killed a lynx and shot it. And I got the gamekeeper sent me the pictures. And, yeah, that was it, basically.
So, in your opinion, very quick, I'll keep it as a closed question, yes or no, big cats or large cats roaming our moorlands and forests and stuff in the UK, yes or no?
Yeah, 100%.
Yes. 100%. So there you've heard it. He's an actual big cat expert. Likes his cats. I can see his cats walking around in the background. Okay, brilliant. Danny, thanks for coming on the show. I'll be sure to invite you back. I think I might be doing a Christmas special at some point.
Thanks for having me.
And everyone who's been listening, thanks for all your comments.